In this weekly discussion on Bhagavad Gita, by the grace of Lord, we have come almost to the middle of the 8th chapter, and we saw that Lord told that in this world there is no escape from suffering, no escape from bondage. Whatever other attainments that you can have, you may be the greatest politician ever lived, you may be the wealthiest person ever lived, you may be greatest artist, greatest literary figure, greatest musician, greatest scientist, and yet you will not escape the bondage of this birth and death. The cycle is always gripping you. You are born, you are dead. And he therefore has given this great example that if you become Brahma, still you cannot escape it. And we saw the idea of Brahma, the biggest being in this universe, in which all of us and also this earth and the sun and moon and all the galaxies, they form minute parts, that's all. Just as in our body we have so many microbes and nerves, other tissues are there, there are bone tissues and so many things. So, also imagine a body, a big body. Every appearance has a conscious part, an eye of its own, the eye of the collection. Like I have this body that I feel is mine, and an ego and an awareness associated with it. I have an eye about it. Now, imagine a bacteria in me. There are trillions of them. So, each of them again has an eye and a consciousness associated with it. Think of the collection of us, members of the Bhagavad Gita class. Now that forms a group, it has a group awareness, like we have the awareness. We Americans, so it has an awareness of itself, a group consciousness. So everything that has a group consciousness, like you can think of the road, a road. Now the road has its own awareness. If you look at the road, many nice poems have been written about the feelings that the road could have. Really, road has its own feelings. Road has its own life. I had seen a nice PBS documentary on the Fifth Avenue in New York. So, they gave the nice history of it. And I was feeling as if the road has its own identity, its own soul. It has its own identity. Now the things on the road keep on changing, like the things in my body, my appearance. So many things go on changing, but that identity remains. Like road, it has its parts, all the bitumen particles and all that. They have their ego, they have their I. And also they combine together the whole road. It has its own eye. It has its own good health and sickness. Now many potholes are there on the roads. So it is the road is kind of sick and injured, you see, hurt. Like human beings need repairs and need some surgical intervention, medications and all that, and some healthy food. So the road also has its own ego, an I, eye of the this whole collection. And in Vedanta, there is this point to be marked. And it is not very easy to understand because of our ego, that I am alive and the things, other things are dead. And we ascribe some kind of life with whom we can connect, with whom we can talk, and we feel that they alone have life. Other things, they are dead. But if you look closely, everything is permeated with life. There is life to everything. There is nothing without life. That is what Vedanta says. Everything is alive. And this shirt that I am putting on is as much alive as the skin under it. And all together, you know, is as much alive as each part of it. This is, there is nothing lifeless. You cannot show even the slightest particle. Even an electron has life. I had alluded to that in some other lectures of mine, that it is a statement from Niels Bohr, that it seems electron also has a choice function. And choices we associate only with life. A living thing can have, should I do this or should I not do this? Choice is essentially a function of consciousness, a function of life. And it seems that double-slit experiment, that as if the electron has a choice whether to go through this slit or through that slit. It is, and it is interesting how it exercises that choice. Funny enough. So what they that he stated there, that it seems that it also has life. So can you show anything that has no life? So this is the sun and the moon and the galaxies and all, they have their own life. Now imagine the collection of all this. A collection of all this, that has a life of its own. That is Brahma. That creates therefore everything. Because everything is contained in it, it comes out and it goes back. And the analogy given is very beautiful. That just as when you sleep, your universe sleeps. You are not aware of it. When you wake up, your universe wakes up. Let us go a little deeper. When a microbe in me, in this body, sleeps, its universe kind of sleeps. That doesn't mean that I, as this body, goes to sleep. Not necessary. But that universe of that microbe sleeps, and it is not functional there. But when it wakes up, its universe also wakes up. When I wake up, my universe wakes up. Till then, it is asleep. So similarly, when Brahma wakes up, it is creation. Everything kind of comes out. And when Brahma sleeps, Brahma's creation also sleeps. When I die, my world also dies with me. When Brahma dies, Brahma's world also dies with it. The time span is different relatively. Different relatively, I gave an analogy last time that if you see through a microscope. Suppose you have a small insect that you can barely see with your eye. Now you may be able to see a small some dot on the on that insect, very small dot. Now you put that under microscope. Now that insect looks so big, the dot also looks proportionately big. Not that the dot stays small. Everything expands. So in case of Brahma, everything expands. So in proportion with our small distinct life, we say that we have 100 years to live. Brahma has in proportion millions of years to live. There is a calculation given there. I really am not expert about that, but many interpreted that what is the yuga and all. Some nice interpretations are there. You can study those. It is not important that exact time span and all. But what I want to mention here is that, and that is the important point there, that howsoever big, it is Brahma's actions also are correspondingly big. So the life more or less remains just same. It is only on a bigger scale. Look through microscope, it looks big, that's all. But the birth of Brahma, life of Brahma, childhood of Brahma, the growing of Brahma, decay of Brahma, and dying of Brahma, all that happen within that lifespan, just as for a microbe. For us, well, that microbe lives just for a fraction of a second. But in that small span, the microbe has its birth, its growth, its youth, its progeny, its sickness or decline, its death, all happens in what we call a split second. So, but for microbe, the time scale becomes different, that's all. So, for it, it is seen through a microscope, so it is a big thing. It looks big. So, that is how these things are big and small only relatively, and when one component of it becomes bigger, others also become correspondingly bigger. So also, you know, that when, say for example, I scratch my forehead, maybe many microbes die in the process. And do I bother about it? Well, do I have the feeling, oh, what a terribly violent person I am, killing these innocent microbes for nothing? I don't get that feeling at all. So, similarly, Brahma just moves a hand, and then Brahma's hand, you know. And maybe many galaxies just collapse and gone. It is that the, and what to speak of the earth and all that. So all this destruction happens. You can read Swami Vivekananda's poem, that Kali the mother, that how so many universes are just born and are dissolved. That is, and that is continuously happening. We sometimes feel that this is our history and this is, we are concerned with a very small part of our life and think that that is the whole. Well, let us look beyond. It is a huge, huge thing. Even our universe, that our universe, it is so huge. We are very tiny speck in that. Imagine so many creatures viewing their universes. They are all contained in the universe called Brahma. And this is therefore the biggest being possible. You can be, by lots of efforts, suppose you get to become Brahma, still you don't escape the chain. You are still bound. still you have a bigger lifespan, but you also are subject to death, you also are subject to birth. So therefore, you cannot escape the cycle except by realization of God, realization of your unchanging dimension, the dimension that does not get affected by time at all. It is not constrained by any time-space limitation. And that is where the true wisdom lies. It is for that we study Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of study of scripture is to be always kept in mind. The Bhagavad Gita or the scriptures, they are not given for the study of history or for the study of language or the culture. That may have their own importance, but the purpose of scripture is to bring this illumination to us that you are the eternal, timeless, infinite. If we do not have that attitude, then we miss the essence of scriptures. It is like, you know, going to a concert, a music concert, but deaf. If you don't have that instrument by which to listen to it, then how would you judge? You know that you don't get the essential part of music. You may visually describe the music, that's all, but you will miss the essential aspect of music since you do not have that organ. So if we do not have that attitude and intention to realize God, to realize this unchanging, eternal, divine dimension of ours, then we will miss Bhagavad Gita. We will not get anything out of it. It is, we may then go on just the external, the poetic charm. Okay, you can study that, no doubt. And it is there, but that is not the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. Like you go to the music concert and see, oh, the nice dress that the musicians were wearing. Now, is it the essential aspect of the music concert? Or you may describe the nice lighting. Is that the, or you may count how many musicians were there and what instruments, the size of their instrument, you will tell. That is all really meaningless as far as a music concert goes. Did you hear the music? That is important. If you have no hearing, then the music doesn't touch you. Similarly, if we do not have that devotional attitude, then we miss the essence of Bhagavad Gita. So, Lord is telling this idea that therefore, know this, Arjuna, that you can become in this world a great person. What does it matter? Swami Vivekananda says in a very strongly worded passage, that, a beggar dies, a billionaire dies. Death follows both of them. A highly learned professor meets the same fate as an illiterate fellow. At death, both become equal. You may be a great political power, and somebody may be a meaningless subject to you, still death makes them all equal. You don't get anything except by realizing your infinite dimension. And that is the purpose of this life, to realize this ultimate truth, to realize that we are that divine. We are not this small or big body. We are not a little achiever or a big achiever. All so-called big achievements are small achievements. They go very quickly. You are not really remembered for any such things for too long. You may get, as they say, 30 seconds of fame, that's all. That 30 seconds may sometimes may become 30 minutes, or may last, if you are really, you have done something big, maybe 30 years. I see sometimes with wonder, in Boston, you have that Commonwealth Avenue, and in the middle you have that nice parkway. There are so many statues, and there are names of those whose statues they are. Certainly at one point of time, since their statues are there, they must have achieved some glory in society. That is why their statues are put. But now everybody has to go and see the name, whose statue is this, and what did he do, what was that person? Nobody knows about them. It is like that. You have to go to encyclopedia to find out the mention of that person. So, all these things, that these so-called big achievements, they come to naught. But one important thing, that you are infinite, you are all-pervading. That knowledge really liberates you. And so Lord says, that 18th and 19th verse, let us read that. Avyaktad vyaktaya sarva prabhavantyah ragame ratryagame praliyante tatraiva avyakta sanyake bhutagramasya evayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratryagame avasya partha prabhavati aharagame. From the unmanifest, all manifested beings are born at the advent of Brahma's day. Brahma opens the eyes in the day, like we wake up in the morning and then we see our universe. Oh, this is my room. Of course, for many, just opening eyes is not enough. They have to pour down a few cups of coffee, then only the senses start functioning. So it is, but that also is, you know, open. Come on, now it is time to take coffee, and then you look for what is there, and then the universe starts with coffee. You know, somebody asked me, in India it is mostly tea. That it starts with. So somebody asked, they were not habituated to drink tea or any such things in the morning. They would just get up. Many such are there. So those tea drinkers, they asked, what do you do then in the morning when you get up if you don't drink tea? It is as if, how can the universe come into existence without it? It is. So, the universe comes kind of into being, you know. It is, then things start functioning. So similarly, when Brahma's day begins, then avyakta means unmanifested. This, like when you were asleep, your universe was not manifest. So Brahma sleeps, everything that is seen, all our universes also go to sleep then. Our universe, because we are contained in Brahma, so our universes also all go to sleep. And then when Brahma wakes up and maybe drinks Brahma's cup of coffee or whatever, we have no record of actually what is that, but suppose that all then the universe starts manifesting there. It is wonderful then that all creation starts. Then maybe a big bang, that may be Brahma's cup of coffee, who knows, that the big bang came about, and then the universe started coming out of it. So we see the universe manifesting and non-manifesting. But this is all again subject to birth and death. It is when the, at our death, our universe dies. For that context at least, our universe dies permanently. We are not going to wake up again in that, to that universe. The situation will be completely changed. We are not going to wake up to that universe once we give up this body, or it is taken away from us. Depends. It is when it is given up, then gone. This universe gone. So similarly, when Brahma gives up its body, Brahma dies, then this whole universe also meets its death. Otherwise, if I die, my universe kind of dies. That doesn't mean Triveni's universe is going to die. Triveni's universe will continue to be her universe. Is it not, Triveni? Yes. So it is, her universe will continue. It is, but when Brahma's universe dies, then Brahma's universe means includes all our little universes, they all are gone. So it is the what is called the ultimate destruction at that stage. But there is still more pervading destruction, and that is when the knowledge dawns. When the knowledge dawns, then all that is product of ignorance vanishes. That is why that Shiva, did you see the picture of Shiva sometimes? Shiva has a third eye, you know, put third eye there. It is called eye of knowledge. And the mythological description, some of the movies, they therefore show that Shiva's this third eye opens and big flames come out of it, and all universe is kind of burnt. It is not, it is a figurative description, okay, but what it means is all ignorance is gone, and thus the products of ignorance, these names and forms, they also are all gone. And that is the ultimate dissolution. Ultimate, the word destruction is not really right there, because nothing is really destroyed except ignorance. Nothing really dies in that sense except ignorance. And thus, the ignorance about the realism of it dies. As the Vedanta example is that you see the snake, but when you go close, you see the rope. Now the snake, what happened to it? Did it die? No, it didn't die per se. It never was there to die, you see. So similarly, this names and forms, this idea of time and space, what happens to it? What happens to it? What do you expect? Well, it will be all gone. There is no reality to it at all. It is, it was appearing in ignorance. And so when ignorance is gone, all these ideas of creation, sustenance, and the Brahma, and all, they become all meaningless. They have no subsistence at that level. There is no time, no space, no change. There is therefore no birth and death, because it is changeless. All other things are subject to change and transformation, and therefore, although appear as real, actually unreal. It is, this is now going to be presented, this that look, that all these that I told you are subject to change. Their lifespans may be different, but they are bound by birth and death. But now what I am going to tell you is the destruction of ignorance. Then the whole thing doesn't need to die in that sense, doesn't need to be born. The other story that I had described, that it is a man went to see his friend, and as he approached the house, he saw that there is a big, ferocious-looking dog at the front of the house there. And this friend naturally got terribly scared that now if I go closer, the ferocious fellow is going to pounce on me. So he called his friend the friend said, come, I am waiting for you. How come that fellow is there? So he was scared. Many are terribly scared of dogs, especially of that size and that that look. So the friend said, no, it won't harm you. He was not convinced. So the friend came down and stood near the dog. This friend now approached and saw it is only a stone. It is only a stone. At our Terry's place there is such a dog, you know, right at the door. Not ferocious though. It is only a stone. Or whatever. What it is, Terry? Is it stone? It is a stone thing. So, it is, but looks very real. It is, so this fellow now sees it as stone. Now what happened to the dog? The dog awareness vanished. The stone awareness came. Is there fear now? There is no fear. The person doesn't need to bring up courage. Sometimes you have to bring up the courage. Okay, let there be. Anyway, I have to go. Let me handle the situation boldly, courageously. Oh, my mind! Bring up some courage. You tell yourself and go. But now when you know that it is stone, that all fear is gone. Similarly, this universe is gone. You know that it is God alone, that is. There is no I and my. So that is described very beautifully in the next verses. Parastasmattu bhavonyo avyokto vyaktat sanatanah yasya sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati avyakta aksharaityuktah tamahu paramam gatim yam prapya na nivartante tadham paramam mama. These are the 20th and 21st verse. Beyond this unmanifest, there is another unmanifest eternal being that does not perish when all creatures perish. That animus, unmanifest, which is called the imperishable, is said to be the supreme goal, attaining which they return not. That is my supreme abode. Beyond this so-called manifest and unmanifest, there is the other manifest. The beyond should not be understood here as this is here, like this river is beyond that mountain. So you cross the mountain and come to river. Not in that sense that word beyond is used, because the words sometimes are tricky. The words connote us, okay, so this is all the names and forms. Let me climb over them. So names and forms will remain here and I will go there. Not in that sense. But It is like going beyond the snake to get the rope. It is a mental transcendence. When you want to go to the screen in the movie, that movie is going on, and you want to get to the screen. Now the screen is beyond pictures. It doesn't mean that the picture, the movie is going on here and you have to go beyond wall somewhere. No. It is what appears as the movie is really in its essence, in substance, it is the screen. So this is the meaning of beyond in the transcendental sense, that you have to mentally transcend that this phenomena of birth and death, coming and going, everything that changes. So go to the changeless. That is what is meant here. That is the permanent. That is the unchanging, on which many such silly movies come and go. When in the movie it makes sense, beyond that it doesn't make any sense. Every movie has its own logic. We think that the logic is kind of, you know, absolute. There is no absolute to logic either. Logic is product of our brain. As our brain arranges the experiences, so we get an idea of logic. That is, see how logic works. A follows B. So B becomes kind of cause of A. So you think that because B happened, A happened. So B becomes cause of A. You see B manifesting as A. B is the cause, A is the effect, and so forth. Now, this has a basic assumption that B must be before A. And that is why B could become cause of A. So, that depends on how our brain arranges the different facts. Not that they have happened in that order actually. That is how our brain functions in a linear fashion. It is a very interesting subject in higher mathematics, that how the idea of logic is itself dependent on our understanding numbers. That we have a succession, 1, 2, 3, 4 and so forth. You can ask Tom about it more. He will be able to throw more light on that. A very beautiful idea that it is the logic is essentially dependent on this, the number system that we have. Our brain is by default come with that number system installed on it. So our logic only moves within that, nothing more than that. When our brain is differently programmed, our logic will be different too. There is no, this not that this is correct logic and this is wrong logic. It is the idea of logic in itself has its inherent limitations. This change of species automatically would mean change of logic. So therefore, it is important to see that this unchanging being, beyond all sorts of manifestations, beyond all logic, beyond anything that is perceived as at a subject and object level, that is, we have to go beyond that. And that is what is called here as the paramam gatim. That it is, or God says, Taddhama Paramam Mama, that is my supreme abode. Mama means God says my supreme abode. But what it means is when we recite, let us tell ourselves, that is my supreme abode. That is what Yogatmananda should say, that is my supreme abode. That is what Charles must say, that is my supreme abode. That is what Terry must say, it is my supreme abode. It is supreme abode of each of us. There is no distinction there. Each one of us is really that being. It is not only that Krishna alone has that right. It is his home. Being God, he has a big palace, so it is his home is great. You are not allowed to get into that home. No, it is the home. Dhamma means home. And that it is our supreme home. We foolishly think that this is my house. But that is, at a temporary level, that is okay. But that is not our real house. We have to leave it. With all its properties, we have to drop it. And nothing is going to be accompanying us beyond this body. As that beautiful verse says, that when somebody dies, what happens? Artha grihe tishtanti. All the wealth that you have collected remains just there. All the nice books and the beautiful articles that you have brought, borrowed or stolen or whatever from different places, all that is going to go away. Nothing is going to accompany you. When you are dead, all those things remain there. Now, I am telling this because really psychologically people get so much attached and worried about it. I am really worried what will happen to all these nice books that I have taken pain to collect over the last so many decades. What is going to happen to all of them? All these, I was so interested in music. All these LPs and whatnot, I have collected all that. What is going to happen to all that? One gets so attached. All these nice photographs. This new generation is not interested in that. I am so sad. What's going to happen to all that? Sports person, they have so many trophies and all that. And they cherish that, make a kind of in their home, arrange all that in a showcase for that, buy a big house. They are kind of big billionaires, so they don't find. But then they start getting affected by this. What will happen to it when I die? Who is going to take care of it? All that remains doesn't work with you at all. And then what accompanies you for a little time? Up to funeral house, you know, the relations and all, they come up to that. Friends and relatives, they come up to that. Not beyond that. Beyond that, then what goes beyond that? That is the path you have to go. All alone, you have to carry the bundle of your deeds with you, your karma. All that is microprocess. That doesn't go away. All the good and bad karma, that remains with you, that you take with you. So, everything just vanishes. Nothing remains. So, he says that look at the changeless dimension that we have. We have the changeless dimension. That is to be held on to. And that is our true house, true home. There we are going to be permanently there. So let us see too that we have that house ready for us. Bhagavad Gita or scripture is to let us know that that is your real house, not this temporary one. It is not your real house. Build that house, you know, that house is, make it ready for you, you will go there. Purushasya parapartha, the next verse, how to get it? He is reiterating that again. Purushasya parapartha, bhaktya labhyastvanyanyaya yasyantasthani bhutani yena sarvamidam tatam. That supreme being, O Partha, in whom are all beings and by whom all this is pervaded, is attainable by one-pointed devotion. It is one-pointed devotion. That is the only way of attaining to it. It is, there is no other path really. You may say that there is sometimes discussion that Bhagavad Gita discusses so many paths, yes. But all paths require this devotion to carry them on. Without that devoted determination, one cannot move ahead. It is, otherwise, we will casually take it up. Do it for one day, forget it the next day, and then that without that intensely applied, regularly applied devotional discipline, nothing gets accomplished. It is, you have to take it up as a path. It is, yes, it is ultimately that is your abode, your supreme abode, no doubt. But how do you get there? Is there a path? Is there a way to get there? This very much corresponds to the fourth noble truth told by Lord Buddha, that there is the suffering, there is the cause of suffering, and there is the state beyond suffering. These are the first three noble truths. The fourth truth, very important, practically speaking, that then can I go there? Is that remedy available to me? How do I get it? Yes, it is possible for you to get it. Follow this eightfold path. Eightfold noble path. So this is devotion, control, discipline, and develop this devotion. That is, devotion includes these all these aspects there. That bhaktya means that love, that true love to God, then you can really do it. Because whatever we love, we automatically put it at the priority list, top on the priority list. That I love football, then it is on my top priority list. It is, then the other things, you know, that will come later. The football, and if Patriots are playing, then that is still more a priority. It is because love, you know, love dictates that. And it is, if somebody has the priority that my son or my daughter or my this, then that takes up the precedence. Other things that will happen later. But so our love determines what our priorities in life are. As per our priorities, our actual life travels. We may say verbally, my goal is God realization. But does it mean that it is your priority? My goal is that verbally you may say, you may say that my goal is to go to India. But if you actually board the plane to go to Mexico, then you will end up actually in Mexico, you say. You like that, if we, even if we say my goal is God realization, it is just verbally asserting it. Even that is better than not doing it, but it is still, unless that love develops there, unless that becomes a priority, if you have that as love, then it becomes a priority. Love makes the things get prioritized. And therefore, looking at the priorities of the people, you will be able to see what they are devoted to. And devotion is always present. And there are those aphorisms on devotion by Shandilya. And the more famous ones are by Narada, but there are others by Shandilya, Shandilya Bhakti Sutra. So there Shandilya mentions that everybody really has devotion. But the question is, to what? And it keeps on changing in the world, that for some time you may have devotion to this, for some time to that, and so forth. But devotion to Lord, when that is turned to Lord, the priorities, like a little child, the Barbie is the priority. Other things will come later. The Barbie needs to be taken care of first. So that is the priority in life. So it is as per our love, our devotion, so are our priorities, and so gets the life shaped. So if we want to realize God in life, Lord says, devotion. That is to be cultivated by association. There is a science of cultivating devotion. That how will I cultivate devotion? By association. And if you get associated with something, a love develops. You get associated with a cat, and then you get developed love for that cat. So also with people, you get associated with somebody, that is my son or my daughter or my granddaughter, all very funny things, but you get associated and then you develop love. That is just matter of saying, that you may say, okay, my son or my daughter, at least there is some connection. But my granddaughter or my grandson is still a funny connection. You didn't do anything, it is, and yet that something somebody else did, a child gets born, you claim my grandchild. And it is like that. You get attached to it, the life starts revolving around it. So therefore, the love needs to be developed to God by association. Just as how those things got developed, how the love got developed there, through association. So get associated with God more and more, more determinedly. And thus what happens? Gradually it becomes then natural. Then you will not have to be told about it. It will become natural devotion. That is called then the Raganuga Bhakti, or the devotion guided automatically by the inner love. But till that develops, you have to adopt to what is called Vaidhi Bhakti, or the procedural following of devotion. Associate like these young people, before they get associated permanently, they go for dating. So let us get for a little bit of acquaintance with each other, and then it may develop further or may not develop further. It depends on that. One girl many years back, I like that story, that I asked, one girl had come here, and she said that, no, I have to go now, I have to meet a boy there. So I just asked, are you dating him? And she said, it is at a pre-dating stage. And then I said, that means you are now a predator. at this stage you are a predator. So it is. So the fun apart, but what I mean is, through association, you never know how the softer feelings start developing, how the bond starts developing. So use the same technique, not with the fleeting things, and not with the heaps of flesh and bones and blood, but with the divine. Develop that with divine, and we will then reach God. So we will discuss that later. The time is over, but if you have a few questions, we can take them up. Yes, Charlie?
If two people have different religious or political opinions, is that because their brains work differently, so they have different logic?
Not necessarily. The reason for the different opinions is also because of the different experiences. Because logic also works on experience. Logic means connecting the experiences. So, if you have some experiences, you connect them, and that becomes your logical conclusion. Somebody else had different experiences, they connect them, and therefore that becomes their logic. No, not necessarily. What I said, that it will be much more than just different experiences. The very system of connecting will change. This connecting, and we connect on a linear basis. You know, linear means one first step, second step. We have no conception also of say 3/4 of a step. We cannot even conceive that idea. It is therefore that is human logic is limited by that. Some others may not have even that limitation. The limitation may be more constraining or more liberating. Who knows? So it is. My poverty of, you know, my brain and doesn't permit me to answer your question fully, but this is how it is. Yes, George.
I have a problem with the word in Sanskrit, I guess it is, Advaita. And this guy, Ramakrishna Sakha, he uses Vedanta, he uses Aveda Vedanta. And I can't figure out what Aveda means. I always thought it meant that you accept all parts of life, the good and the bad, as part of God. Is that what Aveda means?
Well, Advaita and Abheda, they really indicate this similar idea. When you are seeing differences, then you have to see that in actuality there is no difference. That is called Abheda. And when you are, because Bheda means difference, Abheda means non-difference. Non-difference. If you are seeing many, that means duality, dvaita. And then not to see the duality means advaita. So both are quite okay. It is depending on the context that you are dealing with.
Right.
Well, I have not made the mistake of reading it, so it has not left me in dark. Well, that is true. It is automatic, you know. It is the positive means negative. You cannot have only one polarity. Then it is not a polarity.
In other words, one part is constructing, the other part is destroying.
Yeah, so both are relative. That is what is shown, and both are included in the divine. Yeah.
So that would be
You can say both, any of them, no? they. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinasrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantraha Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.